Support for the Closing Market Report podcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the land of Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of September 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics in Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll take up the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. In today's agricultural news, pilot projects operated by USDA are not undergoing enough scrutiny, and Smithfield Foods' profits are falling. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories, and then I'll bring you news from University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. He's of a mind the size of this year's corn crop would need to drop not a little, but a whole lot in order to cause the market to rally. We'll do it all during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Well, let's check now the Friday numbers from the CME Group in Chicago as they settled up. September soft red winter wheat was 7¾ higher at the end of the day, $6.35 the final trade. December contract at $6.47¾, that finished a 7½ cents higher. The hard red in Kansas City finished up the September at $7.08½, up 7¼. And I should give you the July of next year for the soft red in Chicago. It's at $6.62¾ on its settlement price, 7¼ cents higher. In the corn pit from Chicago, September futures 2 cents higher at $4.91½. December settlement price for the new crop harvest month at $4.68¼, up 7¼ cents. And the March contract at $4.81, 7 higher. May futures $4.89½, up 7. July corn at $4.95½, up 6¾. And December 2014 at $5.03¾, the harvest month of next year, up 6 cents at the end of this Friday afternoon. Soybean futures September contract $14.37, up 14. November at $13.67¾, up a quarter. January futures at $13.65¼, up 1. And the March contract ¾ cent lower in the bean pit at $13.43. May futures at $13.10¾, down 4¾. July at $13.04¼, 5 cents lower. And next year's November at $11.85½, down 9. Bean meal up $2.60. Bean oil 17 cents higher. Live cattle futures in the October at $125.67½, up 45. October feeders at $158.25, down 77½. And October lean hogs at $90.90, up $1.50. Let's check the outside markets as they finished up on the day. Nearby crude oil at $110.44, still trading now, up $2.07. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.84.9. That's a penny and 3 cents higher. Ethanol futures at $1.88½, unchanged. Natural gas at $3.53 1/10. That's 4¼ cents lower. And the diesel fuel at $3.16 1/10 of a cent, up 2¼ cents. Gold futures trading $1,386.20 when they finished up this afternoon at $13.60 higher, and the U.S. dollar at 82.14. That's down 0.48 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high of 88 degrees on a south wind at 6 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear and 62. Tomorrow, sunny and 90 degrees. Saturday evening, mostly cloudy and 65. And Sunday, partly sunny and 87 degrees. A Sunday evening, partly cloudy and 64. And then on Monday, as we start the work week, mostly sunny skies and 89 degrees. Partly cloudy on Monday evening and 70. Tuesday, sunny skies and 94. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 71. And Wednesday, finally, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny and 88. Wednesday night, that chance of showers and thunderstorms continues, mostly cloudy and 63. And on Thursday, potentially more rainfall, mostly sunny and 81 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is, of course, the closing market report for Friday afternoon. As usual, we're on the phone line today with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in beautiful Atchison, Kansas, looking out over the Missouri River. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time to be with us today and for going to Iowa, to Estherville, and to Everly this week with me to talk to the folks at the appreciation dinner for the Andersons.
It was a great meeting. It was a great panel. You did a wonderful job at the both meetings, Todd. Very nice. Done and made a lot of nice new contacts out there that really helped kind of seal the picture of the Western Corn Belt versus the Eastern Corn Belt. Driving out there, it was hard for me to envision that Iowa would be as bad as Kansas and Missouri in terms of good to excellent conditions of only 39%, because all three states on Tuesday's report for the corn rating were at 39%. But I think, obviously, there's some good areas of Iowa that have gotten rains. I drove through some of those areas along the Iowa-Nebraska border north of Council Bluffs, and, you know, you've got some really nice irrigated ground, plus they've been blessed with some rains over there. But as I headed east, it really did look a lot more like Missouri and Kansas crops, a lot more stressed, and not bad yields per se, but I don't think much better than average. And although some people at lunch were talking about crop insurance, potential payouts, and talking about silage being chopped, and talking about pretty substantial holes in their crops, especially the guys that I talk with from southern Minnesota. So wonderful job doing it, and thanks for asking, because it really helped with the analysis.
Well, what did it help you find out about the marketplace? What was your takeaway from Iowa, from conversations with the producers, and from what you saw?
Well, I don't think those people out there got clipped as bad by the drought last year, so they probably have a little bit more corn they're sitting on. But having said that, I don't think they have any intention. I would guess you probably agree with this, too, because you probably heard the same thing that I heard when we were talking on the sidelines. They're probably very unwilling to sell corn at these price levels, because I think the vast majority felt like that their crop, corn crop, had been hurt, and especially their bean crop had been hurt. So I think they're probably going to hold out for higher prices and use the bins. And I think the other thing that I felt going home yesterday afternoon, I realized more combines were moving around. I realized as I came through Missouri south of Council Bluffs that the corn was really getting close to being shelled, and guys were telling me at the meeting that they would probably hear of some people running next week in Iowa. And when I got back here on the phones, some Illinois guys were telling me they may try and run over by Lincoln. Some guys were telling me in Kentucky they would be trying to run. I think this flash drought turned the crop on faster and probably explains a lot of why the corn market in the short term here fell to pieces this week, instead of rallying on the weather and instead of rallying on news that China may be an importer for as much as 20 to 30 million tons of corn in the not-too-distant future. So I think this flash drought actually sped up the process of shelling corn, and that's why your basis got hit pretty good.
That and potentially the September 15th early ship dates, I suppose.
Yes, for sure, especially in areas that will probably have extra corn that they have to get rid of and sell off the combine so that they have storage space for the rest of it. But I think this is one of the big features going into USDA's report, because I went back and looked at the August report versus the July report and looked at the September report versus the August report. There's only one year that I could find in the last 10, and I stopped at 10 because of genetics, but there's only one year in the last 10 that I could find that the Iowa good to excellent ratings were down below 40% and even down below 55%. And that was 2003. And in 2003, we had good to excellent conditions of 36% in Iowa, 46% in the nation at the time of the September crop report. That September crop report showed a yield of 138.5. The final yield in 03 was 142.2. So I do think there's a lot of information that we're going to get here that's going to be really important next week, not just on the supply but the demand side too.
Have you tallied your analysis for next week? What are your predictions?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with the 153 yield for right now because of what I've seen in the corn. I did come down in the beans to 41.5. I think 41.4.
Right.
That puts me at a 1.5 carryover right now, but if my demand projections are correct, heading into the end of the middle of the marketing year, I think we could be as low as 1.3 billion. One big thing I think that the USDA and some of the demand bears in the market right now are focusing on is ethanol, and that number can come down. I don't disagree with that, but the export number is very low at 1225. In 11 and 12, that crop year, we did 1.5 billion bushels, and that was with pretty lofty prices. So we're about a dollar plus lower in the cash market. I think we could do at least 1.5 billion bushels of exports this next marketing year, especially given we don't have as much feed wheat. So I think this is one of the things where maybe I won't get those numbers on next Thursday, but I think as the wheat has started to show a much better demand pace, I think the corn will later on, too.
So you're pegging everything on usage as much as anything. Let me ask you another question, and I learned this from you over the last 2 days while we were in Iowa. But what's the trade at this point looking at for a carryout? Are they at 1.7, 1.8?
Yeah, 460 on my model would suggest a 1.8 carryover. And 1365, 1375 on no beans would probably put you right around a 175 carryover. So I think the trade is right with the Newswire crop estimates right now, because I think we came in at 1.75, 1.8 area. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason, too, with along with the technicals, that they didn't want to push in any more weather premium. It was so funny because yesterday one of the big news wires put out on the closing grain market updates that corn futures fall to a three-week low on weather. And, you know, what I've been hearing this past 2 weeks is that corn's already made. It doesn't matter if it rains. It doesn't matter if it stays dry. But all of a sudden, Chicago started to see that maybe weather does matter.
So if we get to a 1.5 carryout, which I think would be safe for your assumptions, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then where do we take, I don't know, July corn, I guess?
Well, I think Dease corn would probably have a good chance of getting back to 570 if we were able to do that before the Dease expiration. As far as July corn, it's
all right. Well, let's say with the Dease, that's okay. A good enough number. 570, right. That's a jump and a half.
Yeah, it's a big jump, and it goes back to one of the major things about the analysis right now is that if the United States is going to grow a bigger crop, and the USDA thinks the world's going to grow a bigger crop, they're one and the same. You can't get a bigger world-ending stocks number without the U.S. growing a bigger world-ending stocks number. And I really don't think that trade has priced that in and respected the price of cash corn and respected the price of the futures market. Just a small move in the consumption to the upside on the U.S. side will impact more dramatically the global price. And I think this is where I know Argentina can plant a nice crop. I know Brazil can plant a nice crop. But it goes back to that crop's not in the bin yet. So I think this is where you can have a substantial move up. And one of the things that you pulled out of me during the road trip, and I was appreciative of it, is that one of the big features to this market has been the lack of investment, the lack of funds buying into the wheat and in the corn. That goes back to the negative mindset since the commodity super cycle ended. The emerging markets have been sold. The dollar has been bought. The U.S. equities have been bought. I think there's a rotation back out of that. I think we're starting to see that already. The Brazilian real U.S. dollar cross actually looks like now a double bottom, so that the Brazilian real could probably gain technically on the U.S. dollar. So I think these emerging markets may actually come back around, and with that, the commodity sentiment, too, in the feed grains, as long as Syria and the Middle East don't get overheated.
So your thought process is that the funds will begin to buy again?
Yes, that the fundamentals will overshoot to that the price will overshoot to the upside like it has done the last 5 years, and it will overshoot to the downside like it has the last 5 years. That's the problem with the market for the producer. You and I and Jackie and Sue and Elaine probably heard, I would guess between us all maybe six or eight people say $7 corn was the worst thing for me. And, you know, it's really interesting. The producer gets it. He doesn't want that heavy, heavy price that's real high that brings in all the world supply and the world production. I think the opposite is true as well, as we will take out production as well if we go too low.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Have a great weekend, sir.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. Joins us from his Atchison, Kansas office.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Hey, Dave Dickey will be here in a moment for today's Ag News. Don't forget about Commodity Week, posted to our website tonight by about 6 o'clock. Our guest in the phone line will be Jerry Goodell. In studio, we'll have Merrill Crowley and Aaron Curtis, and Dan Zwicker will be along, too.
In agricultural news, a new government accountability report says that USDA has not thoroughly evaluated pilot projects that test new poultry and hog inspection methods focused on improving food safety. Despite ongoing rulemaking to create an inspection system based on those pilot projects, USDA unveiled the proposed rule in January of 2012, indicating the new system would save money and prevent about 5,000 foodborne illnesses annually while reducing the number of USDA inspectors needed by 500. The GAO said that although USDA intended to evaluate the performance of the pilot projects, that it has not done so. Smithfield Foods Incorporated's fiscal first quarter earnings tumbled 36% as a pork processor was again hit by declining pork exports and rising production costs. Smithfield's pork exports have fallen because of a weakening yen that has dampened demand from Japan, as well as tighter rules in China and Russia designed to block imports of pork raised using ractopamine. Higher raising costs in Smithfield's hog production businesses in Eastern Europe and Mexico hit international segment earnings. For the quarter ending July 28th, Smithfield reported a profit of $39.5 million, or 27 cents a share, compared with a year earlier profit of $61.7 million, or 40 cents a share. California Senator Dianne Feinstein is calling on immigration and customs enforcement officials to stop enforcement actions against illegal farm workers and their employers, saying continued prosecutions could cripple the agriculture sector. California is the nation's largest producer of fruits and vegetables and has the largest number of agricultural field workers. Feinstein said the enforcement is hurting the economy in California, home to roughly 81,000 farms. The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the British Meteorological Office, in a study of a dozen of 2012's wildest weather events, found that man-made global warming increased the likelihood of about half of them, including Superstorm Sandy's devastating surge and the blistering U.S. summer heat. The other half, researchers say, including a record wet British summer and the U.S. drought last year, simply reflected the random freakiness of weather. The scientists conducted thousands of runs of different computer simulations that looked at various factors, such as moisture in the air, atmospheric flow, and sea temperature and level. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Our guest this week on that program will be Jerry Goodell of Rice Dairy. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org about 6 o'clock this evening. That's Central Time, USA, and we'll post that program, Commodity Week, to the website at WILLAG.org. www.ncbi.org. Now, up next, you know the shortfall in the U.S. corn yields in 2010 and 2011. Well, they caused some declining stocks, some higher prices in both of those years. And then last year, the drought of 2012 continued the trend, pushing stocks to ever smaller levels and the price of corn to record highs. Soybeans have followed a similar pattern with a shortened supply that began in 2011 rather than 2010. And that shortfall naturally was compounded by last year's drought. In a moment, we'll hear more on what to expect from the price of corn and soybeans this season from ag economist Daryl Good. This year started off rocky, but with great expectations for the supply of both corn and soybeans in the United States to build and consequently for the price of each commodity to move lower. Dry weather in August has changed some of those expectations in the trade. Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois, however, is not convinced rationing is likely to be needed for corn.
Assuming that the size of the market is near the USDA projection of 12.68 billion bushels, and that year-ending stocks can be reduced to about 6% of consumption, the crop would have to be less than 12.7 billion bushels to require rationing. If harvested area is near the forecast of 89.1 million acres, the U.S. average yield would need to be less than 142.5 bushels to produce a crop less than 12.7 billion bushels.
Let me repeat that set of numbers from Daryl Good. USDA is projecting consumption at 12.68 billion bushels of corn. If you back this number into a year-ending stocks-to-use ratio of about 6%, then this fall's harvest would need to be less than 12.7 billion bushels, he says, to require rationing. If harvested acres are near 89.1 million, then the average national yield would need to be less than 142.5 bushels to the acre to cause rationing. USDA's current projection is 154.4 bushels to the acre and a 13.76 billion bushel corn crop. All these numbers and the soybean data will be updated September 12th.
At this juncture, the 2013 corn crop is expected to be large enough that rationing consumption during the year ahead will not be required. The average farm price will likely be higher than expected a month ago, but a sharp increase in prices from current levels to discourage consumption is probably not needed. Prices during the first half of the marketing year may be relatively flat. There is more concern about the size of the soybean crop, and prices have risen sharply over the past month. Unlike corn prices, soybean prices are expected to unfold more of a short crop pattern like that of last year. Under such a pattern, prices would be expected to peak very early in the marketing year in order to discourage consumption and then decline as the year progresses, particularly if the South American crop is large again in 2014.
So, if the numbers from USDA do not change a lot in the September crop production and WASDE reports, then the price of corn should remain pretty flat. Soybeans, well, they may need to rally. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Hey, that last little bit from Daryl Good makes you think, doesn't it? So you probably should do something this weekend, and that's go out into the field and see what you think you have there. You may be surprised one way or the other. In just a couple of moments, I'll be back. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, will be along.
It's National Coffee Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1620, the Pilgrims set sail from England aboard the Mayflower. Initially, the trip went smoothly, but underway, they were met with strong winds and storms. One of those caused a main beam to crack, and although they were more than halfway to the destination, the possibility of turning back was considered. But using a great iron screw, probably a jack that was used for house construction, brought along by the colonists, they repaired the ship enough to continue on to the New World. In 1892, John Froelich made the first gasoline-powered tractor. It was sent to Langford, South Dakota, which lacked easy access to a wood or coal supply for steam-powered units. His 16-horsepower machine was geared for both forward and reverse motion. It was powered by a Van Dusen vertical single-cylinder gasoline engine mounted on wooden beams upon a Robinson running gear. And in 1899, Carnation began production of evaporated milk. Elbridge Stewart and a fellow business partner founded the Pacific Coast Condensed Milk Company in Kent, Washington. It was based solely on the relatively new process of evaporation. As sales began to grow, Stewart searched for a brand name for his product. While walking in downtown Seattle, he passed a tobacco shop window with cigars on display around a sign proclaiming their name, Carnation. The company was renamed the Carnation Evaporated Milk Company. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
Well, this is the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Jim Angel. He's at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute and here to take a look at the weather forecast for the weekend and the week ahead. Jim, let's start with the end of the work week next week, where I saw on the forecast from the National Weather Service that there is a chance of rainfall, although I don't think it's very great because they didn't put any chances like 20 or 30 or 40% coverage, just the idea that there might be some there.
That's right. That's a little-used phrase these days of chance of showers and thunderstorms, and it does show up. I saw one model that put it at about a 40% chance, so it's not great at this point, but that is pretty far out, so maybe your odds will get better as we get closer next week. But that's really about the only shot we have at rain here in the next for the next week. And, boy, it just cannot rain out there. There's all the models show rain around us, rain to the north and to the south, but Illinois is right in this donut hole of just not much rain expected over the next week.
Yeah, there are some things, I think, in the weather and climate that managed to put that in place. Tell me about some of those.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the biggest thing, we've kind of got this late season, what we call flash drought, because it's very short and very intense. We had dry weather, obviously, in July, but it really took off and off.
Well, it appears we lost Jim. Maybe I can get up. Oh, there you are. Jim, you're
okay.
You're still with me. Go on. You started to say it really took off in August.
Yeah, it really took off in August, and especially when the heat came on at the second half of August there. So it really was kind of fast-moving, so that's why we call it a flash drought. Most droughts take months to develop, but this was very short to develop. So that's really been the dominant factor as far as what we've seen so far. And then really the forecasts are, you know, we talk about next week, but even out the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts are all indicating warmer and drier conditions. So I think it's going to be more of the same for the next 2 weeks.
Now, the grass here is dry and it's brown, a lot of it. I was in Iowa, as you probably know, over the last couple of days in the northern part up along the Minnesota border in the northwest. Their grass remains green there, so they've got obviously topsoil moisture, a little bit of it of some sort. I'm wondering about our subsoil moisture levels here. Are they gone as well?
They are going fast. I was kind of surprised. We have a few sites around the state that we measure soil moisture, and the 2, 4, and 8-inch levels are all down quite a bit. There's still some moisture down at the 20-inch level if the crops have developed roots deep enough to tap into that. So I was really surprised how quickly we've depleted the soil moisture, considering we started at the beginning of August with in great shape in terms of soil moisture.
Thank you much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. He joins us here on the closing market report for this Friday afternoon. Don't forget about Commodity Week. It will be up on the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock USA Central Time this evening.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.